Hello and welcome to Leading at a Local Level, which is an MLG podcast where we talk about lots of different things related to leadership and church and other things, really looking at how that applies to us as leaders in a local setting. It's great to be joined with, John, how are you doing, John? All right?
I'm all right, Tim. Like, we're recording in the evening. Is there something in you that's been like, I can't shout and say a big hello? I don't know. So it's the first time I think we've recorded in the evening. But yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. There's a good chance that my kids are going to bash through the door in a minute. And I've been told my wife and I have had an agreement that she's going to try and keep them at bay. But you never know. If they suddenly rush in midway through, I do apologise.
It's a door opening with someone, a hand grabbing them back.
So you like the BBC interview? Yes, indeed.
Exactly.
Indeed. Good. So we're going to continue. We're in the middle of a series on leading diversity, which I'm really enjoying. I don't know if you are, John, but just that it's really interesting talking about lots of different perspectives, challenges that we face in church leadership or just in leadership in general, and really how do we lead people who are not necessarily the same as us. And so tonight we're going to be talking with some old friends of ours, Dylan and Sarah, who I'm sure we should probably introduce them, shouldn't we? We're going to be talking about neurodiversity. Do you want to tell us what neurodiversity is, John?
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Yeah, absolutely. So as you see in a minute, we're going to be talking about particularly about autism. But neurodiversity is a slightly broader term, which is kind of contrasted with being neurotypical. So somebody who's neurodiverse is typically seen in sort of lay language as someone who sees the world a bit differently. In terms of their social interaction, their communication, it might be through restricted, repetitive kind of patterns of thought and behaviour. And obviously for some children and increasingly adults, they might be diagnosed as autistic. And we think that at least 1%, possibly up to 2% of the population would fit that criteria. We're learning more and more about it. That's what I do as part of my day job, is diagnosis of it. But we thought it'd be a bit boring just to speak about how to diagnose it. But it's something that is diagnosed, and that you may well have folk in your churches and workplaces and families who have a diagnosis of autism. But there can be those as well who don't reach the level of diagnosis, who still are still struggle with a variety of these things. And of course, we're aware in churches, and this is what's triggered us, isn't it, Tim, to do this episode. We're aware that in churches of families who come with children who are grappling with neurodiversity, so autism most commonly, sometimes ADHD and other conditions as well. They might struggle with the social setting, the noise, the social niceties, the need to fit in, you know, all of those things that can happen in church. And increasingly also adults as well, who are saying actually that church can be a difficult place to be. As you're saying, like, we are so keen that church is a place where we can welcome people in all of their diversity, and not just tolerate people, but actually genuinely welcome people and embrace them in the life of the church. So yeah, I'm really excited about this. And that's a general sort of overview as we start.
It's good. So should we bring in Dylan and Sarah?
Hi guys.
Hi, Dylan and Sarah.
Good evening. Good evening. So guys, just tell us a bit about yourselves, where you're joining from, for those who don't know you listening in.
Yeah, so we're a family from the West Midlands, not far from Birmingham. We worship at Raglan Road Christian Church, which a few of you may have heard of. We've been going there a fair while. We've got two kids, 8 and 10, and they love going along with us. Our older 10-year-old Evan is diagnosed or autistic, so I guess that's why we've been brought in, to share a bit of our experience and give a slightly different perspective from a parent's side, I guess.
Yeah, the main reason that we invited you to come on is because every other guest we've had is from the south. We need to have some more diverse representation from around the country. Although Sarah, really, let's be honest, you might sound like your grumpy because we all know that really you're South East Londoner like the rest of us.
I am at heart, yeah.
Yeah, might need to subtitle me later.
Yeah. Guys, we're so grateful for you coming, and just a way you're going to be sharing, you know, stuff about you as a family. So we really appreciate that. And I think we've been chatting in advance and saying, look, you know, I think you're aware, we're aware that your experience doesn't mean that's the experience everybody has. It's your experience, and that there is a genuine diversity amongst children with autism, like very different presentations. So I think just to say, as we do this, that we're not claiming that, you know, what your experience is the same as everyone else's experience, of course, and we're not giving medical advice or anything on this podcast. But I'm just really looking forward to chatting to kind of provoke some questions and how we can love people well. So, I mean, Sarah, do you just want to explain that a bit more? Dylan's just mentioned Eben. So tell us a bit about your story as a family.
Well, it started for me quite early, really. I sort of recognised when he was about 18 months, really, that his social interaction wasn't, I don't like the word normal, but it wasn't what I was used to, having been a child, a nanny, and worked with children and young people most of my life. I recognised there was something just different. And I guess we sort of spoke about it a bit, and we weren't sure. He met all his milestones in terms of, you know, like the NHS appointments and health visitors up to the age of 2. But then we noticed after that things started. He was more challenging. Yeah. So it sounds awful, really, but we've been quite fortunate in getting Eben's diagnosis, because a lot of people struggle. There's an awful long waiting list for even like a consultant's appointment, really, or even through a GP. But Eben basically started nursery, and we believe it was God, because the nursery teacher happened to be the head senko of the school, and she was placed there for the exact amount of time Eben was in nursery. And without her being in that position, the ball would never have got rolling, because she noticed things with us communicating with her and herself. So yeah, we were very fortunate, really, weren't we, with the ball getting rolling quite early on. And to cut a long story short, Eben was diagnosed officially in reception. So he was 4.
Okay.
But he didn't get an EHCP until he was in year 2. So, and again, that's just because the process was quite long.
Yeah. And just so EHCP is an educational healthcare plan. It's okay.
Yeah, so no, it puts in place help at school, and it's funded, so it's secure help rather than just as and when the school can give it. So it's a duty of care sort of thing, isn't it? So, yeah. Right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Dylan, how did you feel around that time, you know, with that process of him being diagnosed?
It's a bit twofold, because I was obviously open to accept him for who he was, but I didn't want to kind of push it too hard, because I don't know, it's difficult as a parent when you don't know, it's your first child and you don't necessarily know what's typical from that intense perspective. So I think we were really fortunate, we had a few key people who were able to give us really good health advice from an early stage, and I think that helped us as parents digest it quite well, because I think even before the nursery, he'd failed his hearing test multiple times, because the social thing of reacting to a sound, he just wasn't interested in it. So there just happened to be a consultant on the day I took him for his hearing test who said, you might want to get this checked out, have a read of this. And I had a pamphlet in my hand about autism years before he was ever diagnosed. So I think we were very, very fortunate in that respect.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were happy to accept him for who he was and take the challenges head on.
And I think that's key. I think that's key for us. It was key just accepting him and whatever came of the diagnosis, whether it was autism or just any other needs, really, because I think in accepting it as his parents, you're then open to help, and that's key from an early age. The earlier you get support, I think really helps.
And it's not putting any pressure on him either to, we're not trying to force him to be something that he's not. We're sitting back a bit. Obviously he has to have boundaries and borders, but we're not trying to force him to be anything he can't be, shouldn't we?
How did you guys find it on a personal level? Because I think one of the, you know, you talk about leading diversity, one of the challenges is, as a leader, is to recognise that half, not half the battle, I say, maybe a bad way of phrasing it, but the challenge is often recognising that for the parents, there's an awful lot of like additional challenge that just comes for them, just like emotionally having a child that you thought was going to be atypical and is not. You know, how did you guys kind of deal with that? You know, what would you, I suppose, what advice would you give to people that are potentially might think that their own children have got kind of autism or are not neurotypical?
It's really difficult because it's such a wide field. There's no kind of one size fits all approach for your child will do this and then they'll do that and they'll turn out like this. So I guess for myself, just in terms of expectations, that's all kind of like blown out the window. It kind of takes the pressure off. I don't know, we all have these pipe dreams, don't we, that our kids are going to be great at this and they're going to be the best at that and they're going to fly through this and they're going to have the best of me and the best of Sarah and they'll fly through the world. I guess it kind of, or maybe it's just me, maybe I'm just a bit angry.
That's true, me, right, absolutely, yeah, totally, yeah.
Hmm. For me, it kind of took away a lot of those expectations and in terms of, I didn't want to put any pressure on him to be anything. It's just, I don't know. Does that make any sense at all? Mm.
It does.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. I mean, I'm just coming back to your story in just a moment, but you mentioned about how you felt fortunate and that God put, you know, people in the way. You've probably interacted with a lot of other parents with children with autism and it sounds like some people's experience can be rather different, can be quite stressful. What have you seen? What stories have you heard? Just to help us have a bit of an insight into what it might be like for some families getting that diagnosis, awaiting it.
Yeah, I think going back to us being fortunate, I think the school we ended up sending Eben to was, again, the right school for him in terms of, you know, they've supported him before diagnosis as well. Yeah. I have heard of other schools that just won't do anything particularly helpful until there's an official diagnosis. Some SENCOs can be, I think a lot of it is based on funding, though. I think the schools are very limited with budgets and stuff. So I think that can be a big cog, to be honest. If they haven't got the money, then they're just not going to be able to help. I've had a couple of friends who themselves have just struggled with the diagnosis, really, or the thought of having a diagnosis, and have sort of shied away from it rather than deal with it as well. But yeah, I just think that autism at the moment is probably a lot more accepted. People are recognizing it a bit more. There was a stat 9 years ago, 1 in 100 children were diagnosed with autism, but now I've got it written down somewhere and I've lost it, but there's 1 in 20 now. Wow. Or 1 in 22, I think, sorry. So I think people are starting now to be a bit more accepting of differences, especially within schools. I think, you know, it's very set that you learn like this and this is how you learn, and I think schools now are more open to different types of learning and or children not learning the way that they're being taught and maybe having to accommodate that But yeah, I know one particular family at the same school as Evan, actually, they didn't get diagnosed. Well, they still haven't been diagnosed, but they're fighting it. And the GP, sorry, GPs, but the GP just basically just said, it's not enough. I can't do anything about it. And yet the school aren't willing, sorry, the school weren't willing to go through CAMHS because CAMHS threw it out straight away. And I think some schools are stuck. You know, some schools get to a point where they're like, we can only push so far, but, you know, it's having that medical bit behind to support them.
Yeah.
It can be, yeah. And, then, you know, some people are waiting 4 years just for an an MAA, a multi-assessment something, or sorry, I'm so out of the lingo now. You know, they're waiting up to 4 years just to get one of those, and they're halfway through school then, aren't they? So,
No, there's a lot of stresses, and part of my day job is there's also some diagnosis and these multidisciplinary sort of sessions. And one thing I've just noted, and I think is helpful probably if you're in church leadership and there are people who are struggling through this process, it can be a very stressful time, very uncertain time. You know, am I going to get the support for my child? Is the school going to step up? Will the EHCP provide enough support? The family stresses. So again, it can be quite cultural sometimes that some families just don't accept it. It's quite common to have a grandparent often who will say you reject it and. You know, put a lot of pressure on the parents and say, no, you're doing the wrong thing. So if you're a single parent, there's even more pressure. If you've got a child who's having a lot of emotional, you know, outbursts and is being quite physically destructive as they're getting bigger, that is really challenging. So there can be multiple stresses, can't there, on families because their child's really struggling. And imagine if you're living in a tiny one bedroom flat, you know, with no room outside and your child's really struggling. Just with, you know, with the world and with frustration or coming back from school and oftentimes holding it all together and then coming home from school and it all gets let out at home and no one else really sees it. Anyway, the point is it can be incredibly stressful. And people are bringing that into church and they're looking for support and they're looking for people to listen and to support them. So.
Mm-hmm. I think one of those stresses, isn't it, is that when you've got a child who may have autism or ADHD, actually, in that sense, is often their behaviour can be misinterpreted very easily. And we haven't really talked about this, but I'm not an expert like you guys are, but it is called the autistic spectrum disorder, isn't it?
Yes.
The idea being it's spectrum. It's that you've got some children who are obviously quite, you know, you can diagnose quite quickly because they're, you know, maybe, you know, they're kind of, I don't know what the phrase is, but, you know, they present in a more kind of, I don't know, simple way to diagnose. It's just clearly very obvious. But actually, and I think particularly, you know, I think it's with girls. Sometimes it's always harder to spot with girls than it is sometimes with boys. Boys love to line up their trains relentlessly and things like that. You know, and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it can be really difficult, I think, as a parent, I think, and as a church leader, to recognise sometimes, you know, looking at, you know, my wife and I will often do this, you know, with children, it's like, you know, and it's sometimes difficult to unpick, isn't it, the difference between poor behaviour, because you can still be autistic and poorly behaved, and actually that which is say autism, which in a sense, and I think sometimes some of the parents that we've talked to can feel incredible pressure, peer pressure from their friends or church leaders, etc., because basically your child's poorly behaved, but they're like, actually there's other stuff going on. I mean did you have any of those kind of experiences? Can I just say, by the way, your Eben again, Eben comes to our church periodically from time to time when you're down visiting, and he is a very well behaved boy in church, incredibly well behaved, and so he's not like that. But did you have those kind of experiences as a parent? You know, where you think, oh, people are judging his behaviour and misunderstanding it.
I think for myself, it was more. At an early age, he didn't, because he was a little bit, obviously he develops at a different social rate to a typical child, so he didn't really have the typical terrible twos, but kind of as he hits three, he started to really stretch his boundaries and his behaviours. And I personally found it really difficult and really frustrating to learn how to communicate his boundaries and how to discipline him. And it can be really difficult as a parent to be learning to do that while you're in social situations or while the family around. And it can be really exasperating at times and push you to your limits. Mm. And you do feel, to be honest, you do feel a little bit on display a lot of the time. Yeah. But you do learn to cope with it as a parent over time, and you go through phases and you learn, okay, my child responds better to this and it's better if I treat this behaviour in this way. Mm. And it does ebb and flow. So although it does have its frustrations, it's not always the same. You do learn and you go through different phases, and there's fantastic advantages as well as the frustrating sides. It's two sides of the coin.
I think as well, we've been quite fortunate, haven't we? Sorry. Just in that we've always felt really supported by church and family. It's the first time autism has reared itself in both our sides of the family in this sense. I think when you look back, you see traits, like I see traits in myself, and there's possibly I am autistic, but I'm not going to try and get diagnosed. But I think we've always felt quite supported. And I think as well, going back to the like the discipline side of things, we've always said as parents, like as his parents, that autism is not an excuse for bad behaviour.
Yes.
And I think you do learn like what is like it can have meltdowns, and you learn what is a genuine meltdown and what is bad behaviour. And I think it is hard. It is really hard and challenging, like Dylan was saying. But I think sometimes we've had to learn to just go with it. And if he did misbehave, then he is given a consequence. It may be different to a consequence someone else would give that age child, but it you deal with it differently. He doesn't get away with it, but it's different, you know, because, you know, if I dealt with him the same way that I dealt with Ola, it wouldn't work because they work differently. And it's the same with atypical children as well, isn't it? You know, you have to treat, you know what works with them. But I remember him when he was quite young at church being quite noisy and not getting, you know, social surroundings in the sense of, you know, being quiet in church. But I just had to say to people, it's Eben, you know, he's not actually shouting and screaming and running around. And I think the more you try and pen them in, the worse you make it. So it's an awful phrase, but it's a bit of a trial and error, really. But then...
Yeah. Can I just, sorry, the thing I was going to pick up on is that obviously you just said it's not all negative. Yeah, there are actually some great positives. Right. And I think that's really important that we emphasise that actually, that this conversation, not just this conversation, but the conversation in general doesn't just focus on the challenges, because there are challenges, but also there are some really wonderful things about, you know, your brain being wired in that particular way. I don't know if you want to share some of your positive experiences.
I guess one for Eben is that he's not the deepest communicator, and you might not necessarily have the deepest conversation with him, but he really does love to connect to people. So he's the kind of chap at church that will go, he'll literally go around saying hello to everyone, he'll be high-fiving everyone, he'll be trying to remember everybody's birthdays and
how old they are.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if he's meant to ask everybody how old they are, but he goes around. So he doesn't necessarily see people as different ages. He just sees people. So he'll connect with the little ones, which is quite nice to see, and he'll connect with the adults and the old guys, and really does love that social situation. He feels comfortable there.
And he's very loving, isn't he? He's a very loving boy. Some autistic children don't like the hugs and the physical, but Eben does, and he just mirrors that, really, doesn't he? He just enjoys people. And
he's a bit of a joker. He loves a good catchphrase.
Yeah, if he says something to you and you laugh, he'll then repeat that for about a month every time he sees you. So.
Yeah.
See ya.
Oh, that's so good too, because it's two sides of the same coin, isn't it? So that example of, you know, doesn't matter what age people are, and just, you know, going up to them and so on, can be quite typical of some autistic children. But of course, the other side of that coin can be that in certain situations, it can make children more vulnerable. And, you know, can, and sometimes it can be, you know, in some settings, it can be an embarrassment for parents, or they, you know, they should feel embarrassed, but sometimes parents can feel embarrassed when, you know, they're not differentiating between how they speak to a policeman or to a, you know, teacher versus someone else. So that's really great. I mean, what, just for those who, perhaps people who don't quite understand what it's like to present typically with autism, what are some other things that maybe Evan has struggled with, or things that he hasn't struggled with but other children do, particularly like in a church setting, that, that a child may find more challenging about being in church? Can you share that with us?
Yeah. One of the physical symptoms with Evan is he flaps his hands and jumps around. That normally is him finding things difficult. So a lot of the time he will, if someone asks him a question, he doesn't always respond straight away because he takes time to process. But then people that aren't aware will just keep going on at him. But the more you go on at him, and it's not a negative going on, I think they're trying to help him answer the question, but actually it's adding more and more information, because it might be like, do you want a biscuit? Maybe something as simple as that. But because he doesn't say yes straight away, that, oh, do you like these biscuits? Would you prefer this biscuit? And then it just snowballs. And for him, that's like, whoa, too much. Yeah. So he's like in the end, you probably just won't get an answer. Meltdowns can occur quite easily. And again, like Tim said, unfortunately, some people just see that as bad behaviour, but it's not.
What sort of things can contribute? Because meltdowns are often because of a build-up of like frustration, right? That kind of thing?
Well, I guess there's lots of different things. So you've got, especially within a church setting, I've recently done a course about autism in churches, and it was really good. And they mentioned there's like physical barriers, program barriers, and people barriers. And I've made a little list because I wouldn't remember it all.
Yeah,
and just things like noise. So like, does the worship team really need to be on number 15? Can it be on 11? Do you know what I mean? In terms of volume, because for some
Dylan, aren't you the worship leader?
For some people,
it's too loud.
But for some people, that noise is just too much. And like, even as adults, sometimes like we get in the car of a morning and the radio comes on really loud, but we had it on that loud that evening. But actually, our senses are just different at different times, aren't they? You know, if the lighting, is it too bright? Smells, you know, if like your church, you have coffee and tea, the smell of coffee might just completely throw somebody. Program barriers are things like unexpected change. So like, you know, if like the speaker changes last minute, you know, as an autistic person, they might really struggle with last minute change. That can throw them. They might just have to go home, you know, because they can't cope with that change. Like uncertainty of what's happening next, maybe. I know with Eben, in our Sunday school for him, they have a visual timetable. So he knows what's happening within Sunday school.
And he will
Say that again, Tim, sorry.
Okay, explain what that is, because I think that's actually quite it's a simple win, isn't it, for churches?
Yeah, a visual timetable.
It's basically
picture with a word underneath. So like in Sunday school, the first thing they do is they will have a snack. So there's a picture of a child with a biscuit and underneath it says snack. And then they might sing next, and there's a picture of like music notes and then the word sing. And basically you put in order what you're doing in Sunday school. And then sometimes you just leave it up, but Eben will go and take down once they've done that particular thing, because he knows it's done. And then he can see how close he is to being picked up, because the last one says goodbye and it's somebody waving. So it just helps some, I mean, even non-autistic children might, get from that, because they're like, oh, phew, it's nearly over, you know. We could almost do with one sometimes, I think, in the preacher.
Do it for the preacher as well, actually, can't we?
Absolutely. And then one that I thought was quite good under the people barriers is things like having to meet people's expectations. So things like eye contact, you know, like when they come into church and everyone's like, hi, how are you? And they might just walk past and say hi. But people are like, oh, they're rude because they're not looking at me. But actually, they just struggle with eye contact, hugs. You know, how many people in church just randomly come up to you and hug you? But for some people, hugging is like, whoa, don't touch. There's a lot of autistic people, particularly some children, really struggle with physical contact. I said earlier, Eben doesn't, but, you know, I do know my friend's child just doesn't like it at all. You know, and just like cultural issues, like we were saying before, misunderstandings, people thinking they're behaving badly and that their parents are bad parents. And, you know, just there's lots of different barriers, I think, within church. Literal barrier. Yeah, this is a funny one. The guy that ran the course I did, he went to a church and they were sharing some stories. And apparently in this church, they had a sign up by the door saying, as you leave the building, turn the light off. This guy, he got up to go and turned the light off in the church. And it all went dark. And so it's things like even when you write signs, so they had this church had to change the sign to say, last person leaving the building, please turn the lights off. Because otherwise, every time this guy came to church, he would turn the lights off.
That's a really good reminder, actually, that obviously there are lots of people undiagnosed, but there will be undiagnosed adults. And, you know, I've had two people very close to me in my family who have recently been diagnosed as adults. And it's really interesting to hear them then reflect back on a number of experiences they've had at church, but in other parts of life as well. And they're reflecting back and saying, oh, goodness, that's why I struggled in that, just profoundly struggled with social conversation, you know, and I just felt awkward. And there's times when it can be easy to be judgmental. I just say it myself, you know, oh, someone's been a bit rude. They're not looking at me or they're not returning my conversation. Yeah. It might be that they are also struggling, you know, with that. So it's really helpful to bear. So you talked about physical program and people barriers.
Yeah.
And the course is how to include autistic children and young people in church. And we'll put that link in the show notes because it sounds like it was helpful.
Yeah, it was really helpful because the guy that runs it, his son is autistic and has other SEN needs too. So it's nice that he understands and it's not just somebody that's read lots of books, which is fine because, you know, it's a different understanding. But I think you get a different empathy when you've been through it yourself. Another thing that he mentioned as well, and this is something that you're going to have like one of these huge, big churches with loads of people willing to volunteer. But the church he goes to, as they enter, his son has a helper so that they can go and do church, and the helper takes his son and does church with him. Because I think you might find as well, like a lot of people who have SEN children, autistic, ADHD, they just can't get church because they're so consumed with looking after their child during church that it's hard. And I think that's why people don't come because, you know, but then at the same time, to have a team that deals specifically with SEN needs is a big ask as well. So, you know, it's just the other side of the coin, isn't it?
It is, but I think, and it's, you know, maybe speaking out of turn, but that, you know, as a church, you know, we are called to look out for people who are perhaps more vulnerable, or those who are extra pressured in society who have got pressures. And yeah, it is a big ask, but I think this is partly why we're doing the series. We want to be really deliberate in looking out for people and asking, how can we help you? And that might be midweek as well, like parents just fill out their, there's an extra reason they're unable to get to things because it's, you know, bedtime is more challenging. There's this strict routine. They can't have babysitters. This is what it's like with some children who have autism. They can't have a babysitter because the routine is so fixed, and so on and so on. Many, many other examples like that.
And even things down to play dates, you know, and, you know, I can't actually remember Eben going to a friend's house on his own. I've always been there, and that's fine. Like, that's just our life, and, you know, that's what we've accepted. But you feel for them sometimes as well, you know, that people don't feel like they can invite them round, that they can't cope with them, or, you know, that they don't get invited to parties and stuff unless you stay, which is fine.
Because, yeah.
You know, but like I said, that's not our bad experience. It's just others, you know.
You were saying at the beginning how, in fact, before we did this podcast, actually, Sarah, you said, look, I'm not sure we're the right people because actually our church has been great, and as if we're looking for their church has done everything really, really badly. So I think that's really wonderful to hear. And you've said a couple of times, you know, actually, our church has been great. And I'm really pleased about that, by the way, because we could come on and say, well, here are the things that weren't done well. But actually, we learn, I think, often so much more by saying, well, what has been done well? What can we learn from that? So what are some of the things that, you know, at Raglan Road that you really appreciated? I think you've touched on some of them, but give us a couple more things that you think, yeah, that's been so helpful to us as a family, the way that Eben's been welcomed, included, and so on.
I think it's just been an acceptance from day one, really. And no, I've never felt at church, we've never really felt like people are looking at us in a negative way. I think some people look just because it's different. But I personally have never felt looked upon negatively, like, you know, people going, oh, he's making a lot of noise or anything like that. And I think because, as far as we are aware at Raglan Road, Eben is the only autistic child in our children's work currently, they've sort of just said, let us know what we can do to help. So obviously the visual timetable was good. And it's just, it's awareness. For me, awareness is key. And I just think anybody that works with children or young people need to just be aware. So like, Eben will not sit still. And some people would be like, right, Eben, sit still, please. We're trying to tell a story. But he won't. You know, you can tell him, he won't get off the chair, but he will fidget and his hands will go. And I guess if you're trying to lead a story or something in Sunday school, it can be distracting, but you've got to see through that, because that's not going to change, is it?
He did get a little bit of extra help early on in Sunday school, basically to stop him escaping.
Yeah.
Because he used to try to escape the room, which he managed once. But that was really helpful when you got extra space there. I think generally there's just an expectation for him to be normal. People are happy for him to be
Eben,
who he is. Sometimes as a church and as leaders, we have to accept that sometimes normal isn't necessarily what we always get, and we have to be a little bit open to think why we do things, and is it necessary to do things in the normal way?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been quite open and honest about it, people have accepted him. So when he's up at the front dancing like a lunatic,
not doing the action properly,
it's fine. And when the song's finished and he's still dancing, it's a bit of a problem. People are just happy to accept him for who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And we're not particularly embarrassed by who he is, and I don't think anyone else is.
It's healthy. I think one of the things we've skimmed across several times is adults. And you said 1 in 22 children are now being diagnosed, but obviously it doesn't mean that, you know, 20 years ago, you know, there was only 1 in 100 that were autistic. It just means that we weren't diagnosing those people, and those people are now adults. And I think I've known a number of adults actually, like in our churches, who have gone for diagnosis as adults. Actually, it's been very freeing for them, I think, to finally have a bit of an explanation as to why that they haven't felt like they fitted in a lot of the time for their life. But I think that's sometimes also more challenging, isn't it? Because when it's undiagnosed as an adult, particularly, you know, often adults are, in a sense, when a child is someone, obviously their child a child by nature is not meant to be perfect. That's the whole point. They're learning how to you know, become, you know, a functional member of society, you know, when they hit their 20s or whatever. But when you're in their 40s, you know, and they're socially inappropriate, and it is difficult, because I think for some people, and this is the difficulty with autism, is it isn't necessarily always very obvious, is it? And that's what's so hard. Mm. And I think kind of this is why as church leaders, I think, I suppose I, you know, I was fortunate, I was a secondary school teacher. And so we did lots of training. We had an autistic unit in our school. And so I taught lots of autistic children. My wife's a speech therapist who specializes primarily in autism, which has helped me personally spot traits in people, in adults. And that's actually been quite helpful, because often things that I've found quite frustrating when my wife said, yes, but I think that's probably because that's probably an autistic trait. They're probably not being rude. Or, you know, I've seen people, you know, people that have later been diagnosed as being autistic, as in a sense, making quite inappropriate comments, you know, just really inappropriate comments. But when you realize that's how their brain works, it's not rude, like it would, do you know what I mean? And yeah. I just think it's something that, you know, as a church leader, I think we've got to get more aware of, you know, this essentially the autism and what the traits are, partly so we can potentially spot it in some older adults that maybe haven't yet been diagnosed, because it's, I don't know, just aware that it's a big issue in adults as well, really. Yeah. It wasn't a question at the end, that was just a statement.
Oh, that's great. I mean, as we sort of, I guess, come to an end, really, we've mentioned quite a few things there, and you mentioned acceptance and understand. It sounds like, you know, deep relationship, you know, trust, people walking alongside you and accepting Eben for who he is and for you as a family, for who you are. It's absolutely key. You've mentioned something very practical, like, you know, the visual timetables. Is there anything else that has, you know, as church leaders particularly, that you'd think that has been really helpful to us and that might be helpful for others of us to think about in our churches?
It's quite a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think we've obviously almost just gone with the flow, and as things have come up, mentioned it, but Eben doesn't seem to struggle so much with, like, the physical side of things, like noise and lighting and stuff like that. So it's been, his struggles tend to be more routine and, you know, like I was saying before about last minute changes, or if anything, you know, over, be, you know, talking at him too much. But I guess... I'm just going to repeat myself, I guess, really, but it's just awareness, you know, and not being judgmental. And like Tim was saying, maybe training so that you can spot things in people, because I'm a very literal person, and I know you guys have known me in the past, you know, and I say what I think sometimes, and it comes out rude, but I don't always, or not so much now, I've learned, being a bit more mature. But sometimes you don't say it out loud straight away, as soon as it comes in your head. But actually, it's not excusing bad behaviour, because like we said before, there is no excuse for bad behaviour, but actually understanding that maybe it wasn't meant in that way. But still saying, you know, oh, do you realise what you said might have come across? And I guess it's just support. I think support for families, I think we've had it, so like I can't say, oh, you know, we really needed it, but I think if people feel supported, they'll come. And if they feel like the church has made an effort to be aware and maybe have a bit of training to understand, I think they'll feel happier coming, because they'll feel like you're making an effort as well to understand the situation. And like, just like you said, John, offering to do simple things that maybe give the parents a bit of time out, you know. You know, I know you were saying about the babysitting is hard. We've never really left Eben with anyone except family. And we're quite fortunate. We have family here and in London, so wherever we go, we do have that support. But some, like you say, the single parents, you know, they're going to be shattered. And some of the challenges is mentally tiring. It's not just all physical, is it? So I think support and awareness is a really key for me as a church, really, just to show that you're there for them, to support them, and that you're learning about their hard times, you know.
The other thing I would add as leaders of churches or Sunday schools or departments, whatever, is just keep the lines of communication open. You're not under pressure to know everything. You're not under pressure to be an expert. We can't know everything about everything. So for our situation, if the church leaders come to us and say, look, we don't quite understand everything to do with this and what's happening, and they've been quite open to ask us, well, what do you need? What are your struggles?
Yeah.
How can we help you out? Mm-hmm. You're not expected to provide all the answers and cater for all the possibilities. You just deal with the people who are in your church and just be open and honest with them, talk to them.
Fantastic. Well, that's brilliant. Thanks so much, guys. Tim, is there anything you want to add? I mean, I know you've sort of, in terms of visiting other churches and seeing, you know, the other situations, anything you would add, Tim, from your experience?
Yeah, I think I would say that as a general rule, I think churches have actually got to do a lot more work in this area. And that's not a criticism. That's just, I think, you know, people are becoming more aware, which is good, but I think we need to work harder. One of the things that we've done at our church is we have a form, like it's an online form, and parents can fill it in. And they can identify what their needs of their child are, because it's not just autism. We've got children who have got our church have got ADHD, others that are in like behavioural units, you know, which some of that is autism, but there's other things as well. And so what we then do is we then have a couple of people, one who's an ex-ed teacher, and the other is Helen, my wife, and like they again, they're kind of sense like almost they've got a good understanding of special needs, and so what we're trying to do is sort of essentially cater for each of those individual children. But part of the challenge in that is that you cannot necessarily, and this is where it is difficult, you cannot make your church absolutely tailored to every single need that every single individual has. It's just not possible to do that. And so that, I think that's sometimes where the difficulty lies, particularly with children, if you've got, and I do have a lot of sympathy for parents, but also sympathy for church leaders, because you can't necessarily, you know, if a child's got particular issues or an adult's got particular issues, you cannot accommodate for every single one of those. But I think, yeah, having that, like Dylan was saying, having that conversation and making it possible for people to have that conversation. If you think you have needs that are specific, please come and talk to us. Even if you haven't got a diagnosis, you know, it's like, see what I mean? I think we need to be more open about it. And I think we just, you know, think harder about it, I guess. And it's good that these courses are there, isn't it? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, I think we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dylan and Sarah. We just really appreciate your time and
absolutely.
Sharing with us, you know, your story and as a family. So thank you. Look forward to chatting again soon. And I think, Tim, I just think it's been great just as we kind of, you know, think about this whole series about just wanting to welcome people into church. I think so many of the things there that we just discussed are applicable across all sorts of other areas as well, actually, just listening well, welcoming people, you know, genuinely being interested in people, understanding how we can understand people's stories better, not just make assumptions. Absolutely. So many things that cover across all our other topics as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah, well, thank you so much, Dylan and Sarah. And it's been great to be able to talk to you. And I'm sure if you've got any follow-up questions, you're welcome to write them in the chat. I know that after some of the podcasts we do, people get in touch with us on our emails and stuff like that. So I'm sure if you've got specific questions, you can ask myself and John, and we can always pass them on to Dylan and Sarah if they're specific to them. But yeah, and thank you so much, guys. Thank you for all of you that have been listening. Absolutely. And we look forward to, I don't know, being with you again at some point, and get Dylan and Sarah back on and talk some more about this at some point. But yeah, anyway, so thanks for listening, everybody who's listening in. Thanks for being with us, Dylan and Sarah, and thanks, John, and we'll see you all next time.
See you soon. Bye.